Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi and welcome to the podcast. How are you doing? Hope you've had a good week. Had a little bit more sunshine, didn't we? A little bit of late autumn, well, early autumn and late summer sunshine, which is always kind of a blessing, really. So I hope you've had fun, whatever you've been doing. It feels, I've barely come up for air, really. I've just been so mad busy in the last couple of weeks, but things will hopefully start to calm down. And we will put a new date in for another Sober by the Sea. And I know lots of people are waiting for me to finally get some retreats and stuff going in another part of the country. And I do apologise. I know everyone's not in the South, and I'm definitely going to get that together. Meanwhile, of course, I am also one of the speakers at Simon Chappell's event in January the 2nd in Surrey, along with a whole host of amazing sober fluencers. Isn't that the expression? Amazing people who are, doing the sobriety thing. I know Laura Willoughby is on the bill. Sober Dave is on the bill. Simon Chappell, of course. I think Mandy and Kate from Love Sober and a whole load of other amazing people. It's going to be a really great day. He's pulled it all together. Done a really great job. So if you fancy that, I think there's a few tickets left. I'm going to put the link on my show notes page. You'll also find it at thesoberclub.com. So have a look at that. If you can get a ticket, it would be amazing to see you there. And don't forget, while we're just talking events for a moment, as I say, I'll put a new date for Sober by the Sea on. And also the Champneys retreat is happening in November the 20th. Champneys at Tring in Hertfordshire. And there's another one of those in January as well. Second week, I think it is. So that's that kind of business out of the way. What else do I need to tell you about? We've had some really interesting chats this week in the Sober Club. Things are often, I'm constantly hitting the mic at the moment. I do apologise, bashing it as I speak. We've had some really interesting discussions in our private Facebook group, and it often seems to go in cycles. So you'll have a sort of run of people who all have the similar thing going on, and then it'll kind of switch to something else, and it can be really interesting. But this week, unless it's just that's what I'm noticing, you know, we all have the old reticular activating system, don't we? What's on your radar? Or maybe it's just that that's been on my radar. But anyway, there's been a couple of things that have definitely been on the radar. One is the whole conversation around alcohol and the menopause, and that rears its ugly head for so many people. I'm finding it all the time. People talk to me about this, and I may have mentioned on the podcast last week that I met Dr. Rangan Chatterjee, and he's definitely going to have me on his show. I'm super excited. I'd love to get him on the podcast as well. He kind of agreed. I hope so. But yeah, we were having a whole conversation about this. You've heard me say it a ton of times, but just the fact that, you know, women rock up to a GP with all these symptoms, you know, mood swings and anxiety and hot flushes and not being able to sleep and feeling bloated and just all kinds of stuff. And then they kind of walk out with a prescription for antidepressants and HRT or, you know, one or the other. But they're never asked about their drinking, never asked. So literally medication on top of self-medication. And that's been as kind of a growing theme. It seems to be popping up a lot. Most of you know I wrote a piece for Health and Her website about this, and also a piece for Noon, a really great women's website. So if that's something you're interested in, check it out. We've got a lot of material in the Sober Club, and in my book, In Happy, Healthy, Sober, I've got some great advice from a couple of menopause experts. One is a doctor. So there's some great info in there if that's something that you're going through. But obviously, you know what I'm going to say, you know, ditch the booze. You could well notice such a massive difference. I'm not saying you won't necessarily need other HRT or medication, you might. But the point is, give yourself a chance. You know, go from the starting point of not adding poison into the mix, and it helps tremendously. And then the other thing that I feel we've been discussing a lot recently is just this whole thing about how so many of us have so many day ones. You know, we go round the block so many times with this, and it's completely normal. I mean, I'm not advocating it. I'm not suggesting that you constantly, you know, go back to day one. Definitely not. But if that is happening to you, know that it's normal. It's what grey area drinkers do. You know, we kind of go up and down this booze elevator until finally we see that the elephant's not actually wearing any clothes. I mean, the elephant, the emperor. I told you I'm tired. You can tell the emperor isn't wearing any clothes. And somebody in the Sober Club summed it up brilliantly this week. She wrote a post saying, "I'm really excited to be here. I've had more day ones than hot dinners, yet I've always returned to the weekend drinking, persuaded by friends or partner who have all said I don't have a problem with alcohol. But then each time I would feel like absolute crap, even if I didn't drink what would be known as too much." And that's just so typical, isn't it? It's what so many of us do for so many years. We just constantly, you know, we stop and we even start to feel great. And then something happens or someone else will tell us, "Oh, don't be ridiculous. You can just have one. It's a party. It's a wedding. It's a funeral. It's a play date," you know, whatever. And then we're literally back at square one and back on day one, convincing ourselves everything's great. And of course, the reason for that, you know, I now know in hindsight, clearly I didn't for all those years, but, you know, I now see that what was going on there was that in my own case, I'd experienced the benefits of not drinking, and I'd understood the logic that not drinking, you know, was better for me. I'd understood the logic that alcohol wasn't good and not drinking was better. But I hadn't caught sight of actually a much better life without any alcohol. I was still kind of holding this torch for alcohol and all the marvellous things that allegedly it would bring me. I just hadn't grasped it yet. And I think that's just what it takes. You just need to grasp that little piece and that little, you know, that recognition that you aren't giving anything up. You know, there is no point in counting days and you know, sort of gritting your teeth till you can drink again. It really is a case of not, you know, this same question. Don't ask, am I drinking too much? Do I need to be worried? Just ask, could my life be better without it? And well, let's face it, the answer is always yes, right? And the thing that almost always gets people in the end is this thing of, oh, well, it's a social occasion somehow. And, you know, everyone else is having a nice drink. It's the done thing to have this drink. A lot of people have said to me, well, what will I do? How will I cope when I go out with friends, or I go and visit my elderly mum and we have a drink together? How will I cope? And you know what I'm going to say? Here's how you cope. You keep the ritual. You change the ingredients. That's how you cope. You accept that as an adult, and we're seeking pleasure, you're going to want a nice drink sometimes. Of course you are. A cup of tea doesn't always cut it. Of course you're going to want a nice drink in a nice glass. You don't want a carton of juice, for God's sake. So have a nice drink and find something that works for you. And of course, the great news is that the choice is amazing. On that note, I wanted to tell you about this brand that I've found. I'm going to be, as we go through Sober October, starting off from next week, but I thought I'd get one in now. I'm just going to share with you, you know, some really fantastic brands that do deserve, you know, to be, you know, to be known about, because there are lots of brands coming onto the market now. Some of them are just fantastic. And this brand is really unusual because it's a unique mixer brand, and they're called Two Keys. And it's 100% natural. It's low in calories and it's gluten free and it's vegan friendly. So, I mean, that you know, you've got a few nice points there for it. But these are really great low calorie mixers, but they don't contain anything nasty, because this is one of the conversations I end up having a lot with people. They'll say, OK, I really like your suggestion to have, you know, an alcohol free spirit. And, you know, I'm going to shove it with a cheap mixer, you know, a cheap tonic that I've picked up from the supermarket and all good. Well, actually, no, because artificial sweeteners are in a lot of them. And I'm so against artificial sweeteners. You know, I'm against alcohol right now, but I'm certainly against artificial sweeteners as well. So don't even think about it. You really, really don't want to be putting artificial sweeteners in your body. So get yourself, you know, the absolute best. And these are just amazing. Completely natural, and as I say, low, you know, in calories, but they don't use any artificial sweeteners. And the really great thing about these mixes is they use all these different, really unusual different flavours, because normally you've just got your kind of your really obvious ones and it's just your tonic and that's it. But this brand was created by two passionate spirit enthusiasts, James Simpson and Jack Hurleby. And they didn't like the mixers that were on the market. So they thought, OK, we're going to unlock something unique. That's why the name is so great, Two Keys. And so their quest took them all over the world, and they really wanted to source the best ingredients. So green teas from Japan, black teas from India, Sri Lanka and China, Brazil for the organic cane sugar, pink grapefruits from Andalusia and lemons from Murcia. And that gives you an idea of just how amazing and unique this range is. So they use those ingredients and they created four fabulous gluten-free vegan mixers. And so you can use them with, actually, they're fabulous on their own. They're absolutely great on their own, served over ice. Or you can add it to one of the alcohol-free spirits of your choice. So they've got the pink grapefruit, which is just absolutely gorgeous. I must say, by the way, the bottles are amazing as well. They've all got these really lovely images of their sort of exotic animals on them. And I guess that's, you know, because they have done this, all this work all around the world. And they also donate 5% of their sales to wildlife conservation charity called Tusk. So funky bottles. They've got the pink grapefruit, as I say, which looks really pretty, tastes great. The lemon, I think that might be my favourite. It is so good. There are lemons harvested in the southeast of Spain. It's all natural juice. They're really sharp and it's really sharp and zingy. And it's got organic cane sugar from Brazil. And then there's the really unique black tea. So that's a kind of multi-floral kind of infusion with just a little bit of sweetness in it. And the green tea. My son loves this one. This combines some of the most sought-after Japanese green teas. So this is a kind of, it's got like a kind of sweetness and it tastes really fresh and it's great. It's really unusual. And again, you can serve it on its own. You can just have it over ice as like a chilled green tea, or you can mix it, you know, with a alcohol-free spirit. So there you go. The brand are called Two Keys. They're super good. The website is twokeyslondon.co.uk, but it's spelt twokeysldn.co.uk. But I'll put all that link in the show notes. I think we're going to have a competition to give some away as well. And there is, if you're interested in grabbing yourself some, there's a discount code for listeners, SOBER20, capital letters, SOBER20, if you're listening to this and you want to grab yourself some. So great brand, Two Keys. That's, you know, another way you can do that, right? Keep the ritual, change the ingredients and support these really great artisan brands. My guest on the podcast today is Barbara J. Hunt. I've mentioned this fabulous expert before. She's an author and a forgiveness expert. And I did a piece with her for the Sober Club. And I thought, you know, you guys have to hear this because it's a really powerful piece on how important forgiveness is. So enjoy. My guest is Barbara J. Hunt, a forgiveness specialist and the best-selling author of Forgiveness Made Easy. Barbara, this is such a fantastic topic. Absolutely love it. Thank you so much for joining us. Right, where shall we start then? Tell me a little bit about your background, how you got into this work.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to be obsessed by, isn't it? And it did happen over quite a lot of years, actually. I first encountered the whole principle of forgiveness in my tradition. I was raised as a Catholic, and that so obviously had everything, all the kind of traditional teachings about that. And then when I was probably in my late 20s, I came across a personal development course called the More to Life program. It was called the Life Training at the time. So kind of along the same lines as EST or Landmark Forum, that kind of thing. And we were introduced to a particular way of focusing on forgiveness. And during that workshop, they invited us to write down the names of all the people who we thought we might be holding some resentment against. And I thought, well, you know, if I lower my bar, probably pretty much everyone I've ever met. And so I started my list. I got to number 36 and thought, probably resent my mum as well. And then eventually I did my forgiveness process during that weekend on my mum and realized, because my mum had multiple sclerosis from the time I was about 15, how much of an impact that had had and how much I'd resented her illness. Mm. And so I was really then curious about the resentments that we don't want to admit that we have. I think in the world, there's lots of obvious things about, you know, if someone has a tragic circumstance and revenge, or they feel like they need some kind of retaliation or retribution, and they still are able to forgive. Those are sort of like the ideal version of forgiveness. And I was really interested in everyday forgiveness, the little things, the things that I'm not going to write a book about. Well, I did write a book about it, but a much broader thing. But it's not like a story that's particularly compelling, but I think it's true of a lot of us, is that we'll end up being able to be honest about resenting our spouses, our children, our circumstances, the weather, our friends, you know, everything, and including ourselves. Mm. And so I became really interested in, well, if forgiveness is such an amazing potential, it's the biggest way in which we can guarantee our emotional freedom, then why aren't we all doing it? Why are we not able to forgive easily? Why do we find it so hard sometimes? Mm. And so that became my fascination. And then I became a coach, and I mentored trainings for the More to Life program. And I did lots of different personal development trainings, because I was fascinated by, why is it so hard to be a human being? And why are certain things like managing our mind, our mental health, why is forgiveness, why are our emotions so bewildering to us? And what can we do to help ourselves?
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. You started by saying, you know, that you grew up, you know, in the kind of the Catholic tradition. And I suppose we do, there is an element of thinking that forgiveness is just linked to religion or a spiritual practice. And you know, do we ask for forgiveness of God? Do we ask for forgiveness of our sins? Which is such a massive concept. And also for most people, doesn't have any meaning in their everyday life, does it? So yeah. I know your approach is very much taking it away from that sort of the religious connection.
Yes. And in fact, the Dalai Lama, funnily enough, a spiritual luminary, he talks about secular ethics practices, right, which are really for those of us who don't want to necessarily believe in a dogma, but who have a sense that there is something else that's been called either from within us or without us, a sense of we're evolving as human beings, that there are true nature is something that can evolve through our lives. And if you think about spiritual luminaries, they, or even just people that you admire, they tend to head in a particular direction, which is towards being kinder, more conscious, more loving, more present, more equanimous. You know, there are qualities that we would associate with wise leaders, or even wise archetypes like Dumbledore. Mm. They have that sort of wisdom and gravitas, and resentment wouldn't figure. You don't think, oh yeah, I love how he resents those people. That's inspiring. You know, we don't really think. I mean, sometimes it makes good movies, but I think. Our humanity knows that holding resentment over a long time is detrimental, mm. that it just perpetuates war.
So there are proven benefits from being able to forgive others and yourself.
Yeah, for sure. And you can have them, so you don't need to have a spiritual practice, but you can have a secular ethics practice. And I do think of forgiveness as a master spiritual practice or a master secular ethics practice. Or I'm writing a new book at the moment called Everyday Superpowers. And it's an everyday superpower because we need to learn how to let go of the little incidents in our lives. And most of us probably do this to a certain extent, but then things build up. And that's often why relationships break down, is because of the buildup of resentment over time. And it's never dissipated. So it's why it's such a brilliant practice.
Yeah. I mean, this is so relevant for us because, of course, you know, I would say that sobriety is a superpower. And absolutely, I believe that, you know, it is those resentments and that anger and that sort of not being able to cope with emotions that leads so many people down that path of addiction, of drinking more than they want to, of not liking themselves very much. And you know, most of us have years and years worth of baggage, of, you know, as you say, of resentments, of reasons. You know, in the coaching work that I do, you know, I regularly come across people who, when we actually start to unpick things, there's trauma from childhood, and as you will well know, that doesn't necessarily have to mean abuse. Trauma can come in many forms. But in many times, this hasn't been sort of looked at and worked through. I suppose my question, if I'm getting to one, is, you know, to what extent can we use forgiveness as a, it sounds flippant to say this, but what's in my mind is a relatively quick fix. What I mean is, do we absolutely have to delve deep into absolutely everything and, you know, dig deep through years of trauma before we can forgive?
What a great question. I think it is a quick fix, as in often you're holding the trauma and the pattern of the trauma with your resentment. And in my book, I go through lots of the reasons why we want to hold the resentment. And sometimes it's easier if you're holding, let me just get my, you're holding your resentment and it's acting like a shield over your heart. And so what needs to happen is we have to either look at the resentment and acknowledge the pain, or we just ignore it and carry on through our lives. But then we have to drink more, or we have to do other things in order to suppress the feeling. And I genuinely believe that you can't, you can go to the end of your life to, you know, holding onto your resentment if you want to. Yeah. But if you actually want to resolve anything and you want to be at peace in your own heart, then you do need to acknowledge the resentments that you've held. And that was one of the reasons why I was so interested in the idea of everyday forgiveness, is because they're often little things that just build up, you know, like death by a thousand cuts. Sometimes it's not a massive big trauma. Sometimes it's neglect. It's the things that didn't happen rather than the things that did, but we still hold resentment about them. And the definition that I use in my book about forgiveness comes from Brad Brown, who created the More to Life program. And he says that forgiveness is the absolute refusal to hold ill will against someone for what they did or didn't do. And so this is like, I'm gonna choose to put this down. So I'm refusing to hold ill will. So I have the power, and I have the will. So even if you do something to me, I'm the one who's choosing whether or not I carry the resentment or whether or not I put it down. And that to me is probably really similar to what you were saying about the power, the superpower of sobriety, because it's an act of will. It's a choice. So that means that you are then no longer a victim of the trauma. I mean, yes, something happened or something didn't happen, but whether or not you carry it, that's your choice. And then that's where your power is.
Yeah. I think I get that. That's a great answer. And I love that idea of holding that power. But of course, there'll be people who say, you know, but something terrible happened, you know, someone, attacked my child. Yeah. I can never forgive them for that. Now, how do you start with something there's no discussion on whether it was a terrible thing. It was a terrible thing, right?
Yeah.
So if how do we forgive? In forgiving, are we accepting that the action was okay? If it isn't.
It's really good. This is the territory where it gets a bit woolly, because I think a lot of the time we do believe that forgiveness means it's like saying it's okay, or I accept it, or it's okay with me if you walk all over me or treat me badly. And it's a disempowering stance. Actually, it takes incredible power and courage to be willing to let go of your ill will. And that's why I'm really specific about the definition. It's choosing to let go of the ill will. Because the thing is, if I hold my ill will, it happened. Mm. Something terrible happened.
Right.
If I let go of my ill will, something terrible still happened. We're still acknowledging it. And so in answer to your question, I would say you start where you are. Mm. And if you're in rage and grief, that's where you start. And you don't try and do the forgiveness part if you're still in rage and grief.
Yeah, that's such a good point. I've had clients who are, you know, they ditched the booze, I don't know, perhaps 2 weeks ago, and they're trying to sort of make okay all kinds of stuff from the past that they've done or haven't done, and it's not the time, is it?
No. Exactly. And I often work with The Journey, with Brandon Bay's The Journey. Mm. And I really love it, because you're working with a younger version of yourself. Mm. And the whole point, really, of working with a younger you is so that they can say, ouch, to say, I didn't get my needs met. I wasn't seen. I was, you know, disempowered or abused or hurt. And there's something about really acknowledging the reality of what happened, which has to happen first. And also, I went to a talk a little while ago with a neuroscientist, and he was saying that the part of your brain, or the firing that happens when you forgive, can't happen if you're still feeling angry. It's almost like the circuits, they cancel each other out. So if you're still feeling angry about something, then you need to honor that. And I mean, it is amazing. Some people can almost like do a spiritual bypass and go straight to forgiveness. But I would say, as part of the way you get towards authentic forgiveness, means acknowledging the pain and somehow saying, I forgive them, you know, when actually you don't forgive them, can be really inauthentic. And maybe, you know, that's part of what you need to do at the time. But I would say as well that forgiveness isn't necessarily just a one-off, particularly if you're in relationship with somebody. You might need to forgive them multiple times because things build up, or you uncover layers. When I originally did my forgiveness process on my mum at that training, I felt like I'd really said some things that were really important, and I'd healed that. And then a few years later, when she got much worse and was in a nursing home, I did another process. When she died, another process. Since she's died, I had a really beautiful dream one time where I imagined, what I dreamt, we fell down some stairs, some metal stairs in a railway station, and we were in a heap at the bottom of the stairs, and I could feel her skin. She was wearing a halter neck dress, feel her skin on my skin, and we were just crying. And I was thinking in my dream, we never just cried. Mm. We never cried about it. My mum did a very much, you know, the stiff upper lip. We didn't discuss her illness. We just gone on with it. You know, there was this whole sort of sense of not really meeting the emotional needs of that moment for any of the family members. And so the feeling part is really important. Yeah. So if you're angry, you're angry.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting you say that even, you know, after, you know, even at a later date, you were able to do some of these processes, because forgiving someone can, you know, doesn't necessarily have to mean you have to stand in front of them and apologize, or even post a letter that you may or may not write, does it?
Oh, definitely not. And in fact, I actively discourage any kind of actual contact with the person that you're forgiving. This, for me, is something that you do inside your own heart.
Right.
And, or, you know, you can do it with a therapist, or you can do it by yourself, but it's something that you do, because a lot of the time, if I was to tell, you know, my partner all the things that I resent them for, that's to do with me. I used to resent my mum for wearing pop socks. That's not really anything to do with her. That's to do with my particular judgments. And so a lot of the time, the things that you need to forgive somebody for, they're all these kind of like, it kind of builds up. There's that, and then there's that, and then there's that, and oh, in that time you did that. And so we kind of have our little collection of things. But actually, this isn't really what's important. Maybe there's one thing, which is, I want you to be on time when we've got an arrangement to meet. I really would love it if you would phone me or text me if you're going to be late. That's the thing. But all this other stuff, that's about me. So I definitely would discourage people telling the person. I mean, who wants to listen to somebody's resentment, you know, the hours of it?
How you mentioned this, you know, we've already discussed that when you're still in the anger and the rage phase, or, you know, the first couple of weeks after ditching the booze is not the time. How do you know when you are ready to forgive?
Well, there's a few things that you can do that help you. So I think all you need is what the Course in Miracles says is a little willingness.
Yeah,
that's all. That's all you need. And I have worked with clients, because I've worked for a long time on a retreat where we'd have 22 clients at a time, and they'd all do their very deep emotional work alongside some cleansing. And sometimes they'd start by saying, I'll never forgive them for that.
Yeah.
You know, and then an hour or so later, they're weeping as they release their deepest held resentment. So that can be done. And also, there's no correlation between the thing that you're forgiving and your ability to forgive it. So for example, we had one retreat that I particularly remember where we had one client who had a family member insult another family member at a wedding. And she was, there is no way I am ever gonna forgive you for that. And another woman who'd suffered like repeated abuse as a child, as an adult. And the one who had the insult at the wedding had a much harder time forgiving than the one who'd had all the abuse. So it's not even a relationship between this is forgivable, that's not forgivable in as far as I'm concerned, because we're the one who's choosing whether or not we're judging it and withholding our hearts. It's not to do with the act itself.
Yeah.
So I mean, and it doesn't mean that you don't act in the world.
I think it's fascinating. I remember many, many years ago, there was someone that I was, I had so much rage and resentment. Well, not so much rage, just resentment, actually. It really was that. I remember sort of thinking, how can I plot some revenge, or, you know, this person needs their comeuppance. And it literally ate me up, right? That phrase I really remember that feeling of being eaten up by it. Right. Mm-hmm. So I could sense the harm it was doing to me. And around that time, I went to chat to somebody, a church, a pastor, I think it was it. And anyway, we were having a conversation about Lent was coming up. And just in passing, he said, are you giving anything up for Lent? You know, and I'm like, well, not really. No, I don't really eat, you know, chocolate too much and whatever. And so he said, oh, why don't you, instead of giving something up for Lent, why don't you do something intentionally every day? And suddenly I had this thought, oh, I could send love to this person every day. It was such an interesting thought that came upon me, because the very next thought was, you've got to be kidding, right? But I did it. I did it every day. Just sort of took the time to just focus on this person without judgment and just send love. And it was absolutely magical. It was completely magical. It just literally released everything.
Yeah.
The end of that period, I just released it. I no longer felt the emotional charge. I mean, it didn't change the fact that, you know, what had happened, but I lost the emotional charge.
Yeah.
So I really do get, but it's difficult, isn't it? Let's not pretend it isn't difficult. When someone has done you wrong, right, it really eats you up.
Yeah. Have you heard those great phrases? There's one which is, carrying resentment is like setting yourself on fire and hoping the other person is bothered by the smoke.
Really? I've not heard that one. No.
I love that one. Yeah. Because it's like we're the one who's, you know, the incendiary device, and they're just off doing their life and they don't have no clue that we're in agony about them. And but it's true. And I think the fact that it's so hard is what makes it A, to me, fascinating, B, worthwhile. But also there's the potential of it. And this was the thing that really turned me on and made me write the book, because I suddenly had this sort of weird thing like, well, this is just like Einstein's theory of relativity. You know, rather than E equals MC squared, global peace equals forgiveness in every heart times 7 billion. You know, it's like I even mapped it to the same equation. Because if you do your forgiveness work and I do my forgiveness work and all the people on the call do their forgiveness work and all the people who are listening do their forgiveness work, where's the hate?
Yes, absolutely. You
know? And so that's our potential. And that was what that completely blew my mind, because we are technically maybe 2 weeks away from global peace. I mean, we could technically, I mean, you could argue, well, not going to do it and blah, 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 these people and those people. And, you know, yes, but that's our potential. And that was what blew my mind.
Yeah. So how can we, I know you talk about this stuff in your book, of course, and you talk about the obstacles, the common obstacles to forgiveness. And but, you know, what would be a tip as to how we could start?
Right. So it's brilliant, actually, because you just said, you know, like, how do we start? And the very first place you start is to admit that you're carrying resentment.
Yeah.
In the first place, it's, you know, we have to be honest with ourselves. And it's funny because you'd never write it on your dating profile. You'd never go, oh, yeah, bears grudges for years, never forgives anyone.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because we know that that's not an attractive quality. So, but admitting it to ourselves, that was what was hard about my mom. And in fact, funnily enough, Russell Brand, he also admitted that he resented his mom for when she was sick when he was a young boy. And he's the only other person that I know who, well, I don't know him yet, but, you know, the only other person that I'm aware of who's actually admitted that they have resentment against a parent who was sick. Because it feels like such a terrible, I mean, it's bad enough that my mum was ill. What a horrible woman I was to be resenting her.
Oh, I was the same, because my mum had mental illness, and I, actually mine was all came good, in inverted commas, through a family constellations workshop. I'm sure that's something you're aware of, but that was very powerful.
That's amazing work.
It was absolutely incredible, because in that moment, with that, seeing that visual representation, I was able to see all of the resentment that I was carrying for my mum, who had mental illness. And yet I was suddenly able to see her soul, if you like, her, you know, the higher part of her intention. So it is amazing. Sorry, I interrupted you there.
Well, so really the first thing you need to do is admit that you're carrying resentment in the first place. And you can write it down. My habit, I've always kept journals all my life, and in the back of my journal, when I'm noticing, I'm like, oh God, I'm resenting that person. I write it down. Even if I've done forgiveness work on them before, they go back on the list. And then I take time if I'm out walking, or just take time sometimes by myself to do my work. And then if it's something really tricky, I'll work with a colleague. I'll get some support. If it's something that I know is going to be deep and difficult, I'll work with somebody. So the first step is to admit it. And the second is to look, in fact, this is a good secret, if you like, is to look at what you might be getting out of holding the resentment.
Yeah. How much it is serving you.
Exactly. They're payoffs. And so even if, and they can be quite subtle, and again, a little bit shame inducing, but if you can admit, actually, I like the superiority, it means that I'm not like that person, or I'm distancing them, or it's justifying. So if I've got a crabby boss, if I, you know, carry my resentment, I can use it to justify nicking the stationery, or, you know, turning up late, or, you know, like we use our resentment in order for it to serve us in some way.
I really want to talk about forgiving ourselves. That's such a massive thing that it comes up for people who've been drinking. You know, we get this very strong sense of, oh my God, what did I do? You know, particularly when we start to remember. But just before I do that, can I just ask you a couple of specific questions that I ask Sober Club members if they might have any specific questions. I just want to run a couple by you because I think sometimes specifics can be really helpful, you know, for other people.
Yeah.
So one member says, how would I begin to, or how would my family and I begin to forgive my 25-year-old's girlfriend for ending their 2-year relationship by text message when they are 3,000 miles apart and obviously can't meet up. All future plans have been taken from him in the space of 48 hours. I mean, so like a real shock. How do the family come to terms with that?
Yes, I would say slowly, you know, in their own time, you know, because there is, like, just as you said, there's shock and then there'll be hurt and anger and then grief. Because I think grief and forgiveness to me are very, they're bedfellows.
Yeah, because grief doesn't have to be about actual death. It can be of any loss, can't it?
Any loss or even the things that didn't ever happen. You know, sometimes when we were on the retreat, we would be working with women who had never had children, who would have grief about that. So sometimes they're even the things that have never happened. Yeah. So honoring where they're at. Don't try and rush anything. Don't insist, because that's one of the things I'm really clear about, is I never insist that you should forgive, even though it's, you know, I'm obviously an enthusiast about my subject, but it's not something that you should do. It's something that's your choice. Mm. And that if you look at the fastest way, if you like, to unpick it, is to look at what do you get out of holding the resentment. Mm. just like I said, because the detail about, well, they did it by text, so that makes it more unforgivable because it's by text. You know, it's kind of like, so you have to look at your reasoning. What are your expectations? Mm. You know, what is it that has been let down? What has not been met? And honor all of those things. Like, you know, I would have preferred it if we'd had a face-to-face meeting, or you just honor all of that inside of yourself. Mm. But to support someone who's just had that kind of shock would be just to be with them in all their feelings, and they'll probably go through a lot of feelings before they feel like they're ready to forgive.
Yeah. And of course, something that we say on this podcast a lot is that, you know, if only we were taught in school that it's okay to sit with our feelings, right? I mean, wouldn't that be something?
Exactly.
The other question is someone who says, now in a very happy marriage for over 20 years. However, my first was mentally abusive to me and to friends and family. And I still find it difficult to forgive myself. So we're moving on to forgiveness for ourselves now, for imposing all of that on family and friends. It still raises its head. Others don't hold it against me, just myself. So we are coming into this area with this question of how do we forgive ourselves?
Yeah. Well, I think there's always two parts. So I would say that in that incident, that person would still benefit from doing their forgiveness work on their ex.
Right.
Because that clears the field, and it actually can really make a big difference. I work with one guy who couldn't seem to get into another relationship, you know, although this one has, but, you know, like, he couldn't get into another relationship because he was still holding so much resentment about his previous relationship. So that can clear the field. It's always worth doing. I think it's a bit like, you know, going to Pilates class or, you know, out for a run or whatever it is that you do. You never think, oh, I wish I hadn't done that afterwards. Yeah. It's the same with the forgiveness process. There's always a benefit to it. And then with forgiving yourself, because there are other people involved, again, there's the part that you need to do, which is about just you, yourself. And then there may be amends that need to be made. I think that's another part of it, is that once you've done your forgiveness work, you might end up with a new intentional action. So I might, if I think I'm going down the same route, I might get support from a friend, or I might ask them, if I'm missing something, will you tell me? Or I might have an intention to treat my ex with more courtesy or respect, you know, because I notice that when I'm resenting them, I don't turn up on time, or, you know, those kinds of things. So you would be looking at, out of the forgiveness process, once you've let go of your resentment, a new intentional action would come forward. And some of that might be about the other person. But then back to what we were saying about self-forgiveness, I think it is the one that people struggle with the most, because it's so close to us. You know, with other people, you know, they look like they're separate, whereas this is just, it's all in me. How can I forgive myself for the things that I did or didn't do? And actually the principles are the same of course, because it's about, you know, do I hold the resentment against myself or do I choose to let it go? And you still need to be very cleverly working out, well, what do I get out of holding my resentment? If I hold my resentment and I carry on having a drink every now and then, is that me just using my resentment as an excuse to drive that behavior? Mm. You know, but it can be more subtle because we deceive ourselves probably more easily than we deceive other people.
Yeah.
Other people are less fooled by us.
And I know you say that this is personal work, but, you know, for those people who have stopped drinking, they, you know, they can get flashbacks, if you like, to awful times that they never want to go back there. And so there's an element of needing to forgive themselves, but also perhaps to say sorry to somebody else. So where does that fit in, and is that a good thing to do?
I mean, I think it probably depends on the circumstances. I mean, there may be times when that's not appropriate if you're going to be in any kind of danger or opening up a relationship that shouldn't be reopened. Because that's the other thing about forgiveness, is it's not about reconciling. It's not like, well, if I forgive my ex, then I have to, you know, remarry them, or, you know, it's not that. It's just you getting clear in yourself, like it's heart repair for you.
Yeah.
And I always suggest doing that first, because then if you feel okay about yourself, as in you've admitted and accepted, yeah, actually I did do those things and I did really behave and I was out of order, then it's almost like out of that, you'll then know the appropriate response, which might be to write a letter to somebody, it might be to have a conversation with them. Mm. You know, it might not be just to be open if they want to come and say something to you. You know, some people don't want to drag stuff up. Some people don't want to have difficult conversations, you know, particularly like the next generation up. It feels like a more of a to do, like there's no need to say anything. I love you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. That's such a good point. And I think there's many of us who, you know, have kids and, you know, we have this kind of regret that, you know, we were drinking when they were younger. You know, it's my only regret around all of this. I didn't do it sooner. But you know, it doesn't serve me to keep beating myself up about that. I'm modeling the best behavior I can now. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It really, and again, it's the same thing where you can kind of, it'll keep coming back up again and you keep putting it down, and then it keeps coming back up again and you keep putting it down. So it really is like that, you know, like you have another flashback and then you just need to forgive yourself for that. And, you know, and if there are amends to be made, make amends.
Mm. Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Appropriate amends.
Yeah. So tell us what's in the book. What will we get from your book?
So in the book, I cover the five major obstacles to forgiveness. And so I kind of break each one of those down. And all I'm doing really is helping people to kind of get closer, you know, and I sometimes see it like a ladder. So you go from I'm never forgive you to that for that to I want to forgive, I need to forgive, I'm ready, but I don't know how. Yeah. I can't, you know, so helping people with that whole journey, if you like. And then, so besides the five obstacles, I also kind of give a really clear definition of what forgiveness is and what it isn't, because there's a lot of mistakes about what we think it is and what it isn't, and also a bit of information about how beneficial it is. I mean, there's lots of studies, so I kind of just cite those and then, you know, have references. And then in the back of the book, or, you know, towards the end, is that the Forgiveness Made Easy process, which is a 7-step process that people can go through. And there's a book bonus where there's me speaking you through the process, so you don't actually have to read it, so you can listen to the audio and go through the process yourself. And then there's just sort of, you know, some more resources and tips, and also an invitation to do your forgiveness work, because this is the thing that I'm so interested in. It's like, even if there's only a few of us who keep our hearts as like a garden of peace, because we choose to always do our forgiveness work, that's going to make such a difference in the world.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I'm just starting doing something called the forgiveness field. And funnily enough, I'm a musician like you. I wrote a song for International Peace, the Day of Peace, last year. And on the 21st of September this year, I'm going to hold a forgiveness field, which will be like on Zoom. Everyone can come, and it's all with your microphone off, but I'll lead everybody through the steps. So we'll go through them all together as a group. and just contribute to actual real peace, because it starts in your heart. And every act of forgiveness, your act of forgiveness is an act of amnesty for all of humanity. And I really feel like more than ever, there's so much division and divisiveness.
Yeah,
and we all need to be doing our work in earnest. Otherwise, I really, you know, nothing will change.
Absolutely.
But this is something that is quite subversive. I call it the revolutionary guide, because actually I am a revolutionary at heart, you know, and this is quite a subversive way of doing it.
We haven't even had a chance to touch on the Ho'oponopono, which is probably too big a concept to get into now, but just very briefly, just explain what it is for anyone who wants to look into that more.
Yeah, it's a really beautiful practice, and it's a forgiveness practice that where you say, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, or in any order, that's the order I learnt them in. And you can visualize the person. It's similar to what you were saying, actually, Janie, where you're
send love,
you nominated somebody and you sent love. So I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you.
And it's very powerful.
It is very powerful, and it's a wonderful thing to do. And it's actually, I think it's wonderful for self-forgiveness.
Yes,
for me, too. It's an internal mantra that I'll start my day with sometimes, or end my day with.
Lovely. Brilliant. So you should send me the link to that event. We'll definitely promote that. That'd be great. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Barbara J. Hunt is the author of Forgiveness Made Easy. Thank you so much for being my guest.
Such a pleasure. Thanks, Janie.
Barbara J. Hunt, and I'll put the, again, in the show notes, I'll give you the link to Barbara's book and other work that she's done. Fantastic work. It's a theme that seems to be emerging at the moment. And I have another guest coming up in the next couple of weeks called Neil Shah from the Stress Management Society. And we get into a conversation in that interview about forgiveness as well, whether that is forgiving yourself or forgiving others. We're on the forgiveness tip for a while. Anyways, all that remains is for me to say happy autumn. I think it's official now that we're kind of in autumn. And make sure that you know where to find me, where to connect with the Sober Club if you're interested, thesoberclub.com. Whatever you choose, whichever path you want to take to do this, it doesn't matter, but get yourself connected, tell someone, put the preparation in place for yourself, you know, eat well, get yourself inspired, and connect with other people who are doing a similar thing, and you won't go far wrong. You know where to find me across social media, at Janie Lee Grace. Please share this podcast with other people. It would really mean a lot to have more listeners to the podcast who are really, you know, starting to think about this new way of life, and it's absolutely the best way you can possibly live. It's the best thing you'll ever do for yourself. I'll see you next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.